It's Sunday, June 20th, and you are very welcome to Beyond Belief. Joanna Bryan with you for the next hour, and I'm delighted to have your company. Our special guest on tonight's programme is Bishop-elect Father Gerry Nash. Those of you who tuned in last week would have heard Father Brendan Quinlivan interview Father Gerry just after it was announced that he was to become the next Bishop of Ferns. On tonight's programme, I speak to the Bishop-elect of Ferns about his introduction to the people of Wexford in St Aidan's Cathedral in Enniscorthy on Friday the 11th of June. And we will also hear from Stephen Fletcher on some breaking news about the Church of Ireland Diocese here in the west of Ireland. We also have an interview with Dr. Lorna Gold, a climate campaigner and author, who will speak to us about the impact the pandemic is having on the climate crisis. Of course, we will have plenty of good music throughout the show. And here is a track now, a recent release by Ed Sheeran, and the song is Afterglow.
Stop the clocks, it's amazing. You should see the way the light dances off your hair. A million colors of hazel, golden and red. Saturday morning is fading. The sun's reflected by the coffee in your hand. My eyes are caught in your gaze all over again.
Listening to Beyond Belief on Clare FM. It's great to hear good news, isn't it? And I was more than delighted when I heard that Pope Francis had appointed a Clare man as the next Bishop of Ferns. I was really happy during the week to catch up with the Bishop-elect Gerry Nash and to chat to him about his introduction to the people of Ferns in Enniscorthy last week, and to ask him about his hopes and his vision for his new role in leadership. Father Gerry Nash, thank you very much for being with us once again this week on Beyond Belief.
Delighted, Joanne. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Can I begin by saying congratulations once again to you on being appointed the new Bishop of Ferns?
Thank you very much, Joanne. Thank you for the congratulations. I'm still in a bit of shock and still coming to terms with the appointment, but I'm delighted. I'm delighted for, you know, the happiness it has brought into a lot of people's lives, that, you know, people are genuinely pleased, not just for myself, but they're pleased for me, but they're also pleased for the work that we've done here has been recognised by Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying the feeling of being part of something, you know, that was acknowledged as being worthwhile.
Very good. And it, for all of us, Ger, you know, it is good news. You know, you're hearing that. You were telling me before the interview about getting many messages from people all around the diocese that you've worked with.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's lovely to get good news. It's
Absolutely.
Been a very difficult year and a half. So we're yeah. delighted to receive this good news.
Yeah. No, I agree. Good news is always welcome.
Yeah. Ger, can you talk to us about then your special day? Last Friday was a very special day for you.
Okay, thanks, Joanne. I drove down to Enniscorthy. The Cathedral for Ferns is in Enniscorthy, even though the Bishop lives in Wexford. So it's kind of unusual in that there's 12 miles between the Bishop's house and the Cathedral. But anyway, Enniscorthy is the Cathedral, beautiful building in a really historic town. Vinegar Hill is right across the Slaney from the Cathedral. And a huge link as well to County Clare, which I didn't realise until I went down, that St. Sennan of Scattery had a foundation where Enniscorthy is, on the banks of the Slaney. And the other half of Enniscorthy parish, you have the cathedral on one side of the river, and the other side that contains Vinegar Hill is called Shannon. They call the parish Shannon Parish.
After Sennan.
After Sennan. And that's where his foundation was. So there's real historic links between the two. So I was there for 12 noon on Friday, the 11th. It was the Feast of the Sacred Heart. The announcement, the Mass, was said at 12 o'clock by Archbishop Colo, the Papal Nuncio to Ireland, which would be the normal practice that he did. And in the course of the Mass, he introduced me to the people and he talked at great length about what, I suppose, Pope Francis's vision for the Church at this time and for what they were looking for in the bishops that are currently being selected. And very much looking for people from a pastoral background and from people who bring with them the experience of having worked with great people, as I have myself here in the Diocese of Killaloe, you know, bringing all that learning and knowledge and experience to a new diocese. So the Mass was, Archbishop Okolo spoke for quite a while, and then Bishop Dennis Brennan spoke for a little while to welcome me, and then I spoke a little bit as well, just thanking people, I suppose, to a certain extent telling people who I was, which was the key message really. And, you know, when you're a stranger coming in, who are you, what's your story? So it took me a little while to tell that story and the things we were involved in here. And I suppose then to think a little bit about the point of we're at in church, in our church story at this time, that we have the synod coming up, and Pope Francis is really anxious that the synodal process that will culminate in 2003, that begins in the parishes and it goes all the way to Rome, that it isn't just bishops or just priests, that it is a process that's begun at ground level and gathers the information that will be part of the thinking in Rome at the end of 2003. It's great to be taking up a role at a key time when Pope Francis is offering us vision at a world level, and I suppose to translate that and give a vision locally to parishes and dioceses will be the key thing.
There's many who would say maybe to have become a bishop 20 years ago would be a much easier job to do. What would you think? Would you have been rather given the job 20 years ago or in the current state of people's attitude towards faith, increase in secularisation?
That's a really good question, which is very difficult to answer. I think it would have been an easy job. But I think, I suppose, looking back as well, we have been through an extremely tough time in the last 20 years in church generally, you know, and people's faith has been rocked, and a lot of great bishops carried a lot of pain over 20 years in terms of trying to sort out. So to a certain extent, look, with the help of God, and this is true, is that much of the really bad stuff has now been left in the past, that there are now systems of accountability and responsibility in place that will prevent people being hurt the way they would have been in the past. Now, people are always going to be hurt in different ways, you know, but certainly the serious damage that the church would have done in the past. So I think a lot of great bishops had to carry a lot of meet suffering people and carry a lot of pain and deal with that. And to a certain extent, I think that's a plus. Do you know,
yes,
that's finished.
But you have you know, back 20 years ago, although those revelations were coming out, you know, the church pews were still fairly full.
Oh, they were. They were.
Yeah,
you absolutely
know, many people have walked in the last 20 years.
This is true.
And,
this
you
is
know,
true.
You, we're going to have far smaller congregations. So, you know, how are you going to keep those who are still involved? How do you think you're going to keep them engaged?
Okay.
Or maybe people are on the margins?
I think that the people who are engaged, we're going to have to ask people to be able to reach out to people. You know, we're going to have to become a missionary church. And it's not about just sort of taking a thing. We have 100 people within the church. Let's lock the doors in case we lose any more. If we do, sooner or later, we're going to open the door and the 100 are going to go. It's going to have to be actually open the doors and say to the 100 people, can we get out there? What can we do? How can we have a different presence in the world? So I think it's very difficult to know what the future will look like, but I think it has to be about reaching out and has to be about initiatives and going out and being present to people where they're at in their lives and listening to their stories and bringing the gospel. Because we are a sacramental church, but in the past, I think maybe we were a sacramental church at the expense of being a gospel church as well. We need to balance that. The sacraments build on the gospel. And for many people, the gospel is good news that they haven't been told. So I think we need to start there.
And one of the things you spoke about in your talk down in St. Aidan's Cathedral last Friday was, you know, you spoke about lots of areas that you've worked in, but I suppose one that you sounded most proud of is the new ministries here in Killaloe Diocese.
Yes.
Is that something you would hope you'd like to see run in Ferns also?
Absolutely. I suppose I was even trying to minimise it a little bit because there's nothing worse, as any priest or anyone will say, than going to a new place and telling them about the great time you had in the last place. So I was trying to not go too far down that particular, you know. But yes, now that I'm safely in County Clare, I can say how proud I am about all the work that we did as a team, Maureen Kelly, Miranda Quinlevin and myself, mm-hmm. backed by Bishop Finton and backed by the diocese, and with the help and assistance of an enormous number of people, mm-hmm. voluntarily and with great enthusiasm and energy, and the commitment of the 25 people we're training in new ministries as well. Mm-hmm.
Will the way forward have to include lay people?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that ministry will have to be much broader than ordained ministry. And that'll be definitely one of the things that I will be saying in Ferns, that it'll have to be the ministry that's open and includes people. And then that trains people as well, that invests in people to train them into to become effective ministers of the gospel.
Mm-hmm. And we're at very new stages. The 25 people who have been training are at the end of their academic training here in Killaloe, isn't that
That's
right?
correct indeed, yeah. And I congratulate them on that because it was very difficult. And they only had little more than a year. They had just a bare year of face-to-face traditional training in front of their lecturers where they could talk to the lecturer and ask questions, and then it went entirely online. As many people out there will know, with children and grandchildren in college for the last year or two, very difficult and very hard to stay motivated, and yet our 25 stuck with it in this face of all sorts of adversity with COVID, and it's a credit to them that they've all come out successfully.
And they're nearly ready. They have another little bit to go in their training before the people on the ground will actually see them engaging their ministry.
That's right. I suppose the big gap that happened during COVID was practical experience. All of the likely places that practical experience could happen didn't happen. Hospital chaplaincies, schools, you know, parish work, everything was locked down. So actually practical experience was in shorts. So we need to catch that up.
Okay.
That's the bit that needs to be
And
caught.
Then they will be commissioned.
They will, please God, by Bishop Finton, and they will become. And it's interesting that in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, Pope Francis has instituted a new ministry of catechists. Now, there were always catechists in the church from the very beginning, and there have been catechists in mission territories, but it was a role rather than a ministry. It was a job, a task, you know, the same as many other tasks. But now Pope Francis has said these commission ministries in a formal ceremony that's common to the whole church right across the world will be given a ministerial role. And I think we were just a small bit ahead of him, but, you know, he caught up.
Well done. That's nice to be able to joke. I'm sure Pope Francis would enjoy that. Sure. We caught up with him.
Yeah.
He is quite the visionary, though. Are you inspired by him?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
What it is you admire most about him?
I think possibly his courage. I think he's not afraid to say out loud things that might, not saying them out loud in the sense of this is my opinion and I'm saying it, but actually asking questions out loud and saying, I wonder about, I wonder what should we be doing. And he's asking about all sorts of things about church and wondering about, he has pondered the structure of the church and the, and where power and governance reside. But he's also questioned, you know, thinking out loud, what are we thinking about the fact that so much of the wealth of the world resides in a very small section of the world? What are we doing about the planet, the care of the planet? So he's not afraid to ask questions out loud. I think that's, you know.
Yeah, he's certainly not about maintenance. He's very much back to the gospel. Yeah. And can I ask you then about what you see as the future of the church?
That's a good question. I think I think the church will be inevitably smaller. I think people will engage with church, and the church is so many different countries, but say in Ireland, I think people will engage with church where it touches them, where it has something to say to them. I think there's still huge engagement around First Communion and Confirmation and Baptism, and people like to link into those high points. Now, that may change too, you know, I wouldn't say...
Well, we know the sacrament of marriage now, one-third of marriages are only celebrated within church. That's two-thirds have chosen.
That's right.
You know, when that special day comes in their lives, outside of church.
That's
so
right.
We'd imagine, will those people go on to baptise their children if their marriage wasn't important enough to be, you know, celebrated within church? So we're definitely moving into a more secular time.
Absolutely. But I think... We are, but people are also won't be entirely secular. They'll pick and choose. Do you know? Some people might say that's terrible that you can't pick and choose. But the reality is that people will pick and choose. And I think if we engage with people when they do pick and engage meaningfully and offer a meaningful experience, then they'll pick even more bits the next time. Do you know? So I'd be fierce unhappy with any model of church or anyone who presents church saying you're either in or you're out. I'd be fierce unhappy with that.
Again, you mentioned that it would be a place of welcome, that's the vision you had, you know,
absolutely,
when you're bishop of France, that
absolutely,
there would always be a welcome, an
absolutely,
open door for whoever wants to come,
absolutely,
in for whatever period.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember, say, in Cruachan, the parish built a parish centre, which at one level is just a building, but another level, after, it was a place of welcome where people at funerals and times like that got tea and they got a sense of being together. And I think it was something that I'm really pleased about, you know, that's something that you can, if you can create a space for people to feel welcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly one thing people really need is community, and church has always provided that sense of parish.
Yeah.
You know, people ask, what parish are you from? They maybe thought of their, you know, their local Christian community as parish.
Yes. Yeah.
More so than the GA even, you
absolutely
know, first of all, parish was the local Christian community.
A father and son, they stood hand in hand as they watched Wexford play from the back of the stand, and the words that he said I'll hear when I'm old. It is a beauty to behold when you see the purple and gold. Ah, the purple and gold is my heart and my soul from the men of today to the heroes of old. Ah, the purple and gold is the dream I still hold. It is a beauty to behold when you see the purple and gold. I can still see them now on the All-Ireland Day, and the record stood proud, and by God could they play, and the Quigley stood tall, every man brave and bold. It was a privilege, I was told, to wear the purple and gold. Ah, the purple and gold is my heart and my soul from the men of today to the heroes of old.
you see the purple and gold, ah, the purple and gold is my heart and my soul from the man of today to the heroes of old. Ah, the purple and gold is the dream I still hold. It was a privilege, I was told, to wear the purple and gold. Ah, the purple and gold is my heart and my soul from the men of today to the heroes of old. Ah, the purple and gold is the dream I still hold. It is a beauty to behold when you see the purple and gold. Ah, the purple and gold is my heart and my soul from the men of today.
And Father Jerry, I'd love to ask you about your views on the youth. You know, for many, we have definitely far, far less young people engaged sure. in church. For many of them, they see the church as very irrelevant in their lives because they would have difficulties with maybe some of the church's teaching. You know, how, in your mind, can we reach out and bring the gospel to their lives? So how can we connect with them?
Okay. I think that probably the best doorway is, what do they need? What are their needs? Do you know, what is the reality of their lives? Because it's not a question either of saying, well, we don't need the church. That could be well true, but they have needs in their lives. You know, there's a whole level of, even we mentioned a 20-year gap there a while ago about bishops. It's a hugely different world for somebody who's, say, 18 now than it was 18, 20 years ago. The world has changed so much, and there are people under so much different pressures and expectations, and I suppose a level of exposure to the world that is so much bigger, you know, in terms of social media, that there's no safe space hardly for young people. And I suppose to be able to understand what their needs are, and to be able to say, look, in some way, the gospel and the message of Christ in the gospel is an answer to a lot of the problems, you know, as long as we, and to give them the space to explore that in some way. But it's going to be an uphill struggle. Like, I suppose one of the tests of church will we spend our money on? Now, I know we'll be in a tight time for money and everything. You can always tell what something is important to someone, where they spend their money, you know, in every respect, not just church. Yeah. So will we invest resources in young people? So that's a question.
And you're right. And for any young people who have faith and have had their faith nourished, first of all in the home, but secondly in, whether it be in youth ministry groups or in their schools, you know, they're so grateful for it.
Yeah.
So those who are exposed to it and who latch onto it, it is a great gift in their lives. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
And young people won't be like us when we were teenagers.
No.
And people, and so many people will say to you, very often in all sorts of diocesan parish meetings, what are you doing for the young people? But they actually already have the script written in their mind. Mm. The second part of the question is, what are you doing to get young people in to the things that I find meaningful?
Mm.
And of course the answer is nothing, and we won't, because that's not the world that they find meaningful. It is, how can we go out to them with the gospel?
Yes, yeah. And they're very authentic, and the gospel values actually really speak to them.
Yeah.
So can I go back, Jerry, to the moment the papal nuncio makes a phone call? Can you talk to me about, I'd love to know, you know, when he told you, I suppose it's an offer, you can say yes or no to this role. Can you talk to me about what were the difficulties in saying yes? What would you be leaving behind?
That's a good question. I suppose, first of all, I got the phone call at 10:30 on a Saturday night to come to Dublin on the Monday. And he did say what the job was, and he did say what the role was and what the question would be. So I didn't sleep much on that Saturday night. No, I slept great on Sunday night because I was exhausted. But that was a night for looking at the ceiling, very definitely. And because it was a shock, really, just plain and simple. But to be a multitude of things, you know, and different days, I think, are different objections. So at a personal level, the thing of leaving, you know, being reared in Clare, I've lived in Clare with the exception of the bit of time in Maynooth and 5 years in Roscrea, but on that I've always ministered in Clare. So you're leaving a place and circles of friends that are familiar to you and parishes where you worked, leaving family, you know, in the sense of there's no longer, you'll be leaving the possibility of informal family gatherings that, you know, would have to be sort of planned rather than just rocking up to somebody's door for a cup of tea or whatever. So those kind of things, but also I suppose I'm under no illusions of the size of the job, having worked with Bishop Fintan and Bishop Kieran and Bishop Willie, you know, that the tasks and the challenges and the sheer contradiction in the job very often about trying to satisfy really good people who have entirely competing priorities. So there's all of that. There's also the understanding, the thing of every area of the country has a different culture. And we have a particular culture here in this county. Even in the Clare half of Killaloe Diocese, there's a different culture to the other half. When you go to different parts of there's a different culture of people and of church. And to be fair to the nuncio, he's for a man who's only living in the country about 2 or 3 years, but he knows that, and he very much in tune with the different cultures and the different places, and he knew what Ferns is like in terms of the kind of people who live there. You know, it's history, it's culture, even the things like the things that matter to them. He was very anxious that things that matter to them would matter to me. So he, for example, they have a big pilgrimage, which I've never been on, but I visited the place called Our Lady's Island, which is a very old pilgrimage, and it's down in the south of Wexford, and it runs from the 15th of August to the 8th of September, and I've no idea how many thousand people go, but I don't know how many people would be allowed even now. Certainly in pre-COVID times, it was a really significant pilgrimage piece of the church in Ferns. So he was very anxious that would, you know, that someone he was appointing would understand how close that was to people's culture and heart and everything. And I think it's also, these are the kind of things that will, there are people who will go to things like that who will have sort of stepped away from the regular church going. Pilgrimage and linking in.
A lot of future the church maybe won't happen in church buildings per se. It'll be in the likes of these,
likes,
you know, pilgrimages
like
out in nature. Nature has been a great healer for so many during COVID times.
Absolutely.
You know, and for many, that's maybe where they connect with the divine. Yeah.
And I visited that place once, but it was out of pilgrimage season. It wasn't, and it's a fabulous, beautiful, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. It's down in the very south of the Wexford. Mm-hmm. It's called Our Lady's Island. The other bit of culture is interesting that he said is what's important to them in Wexford is their opera.
Yes.
So I'm afraid now there's a bit
you're going to get there's great there's culture.
There's a bit of a learning curve starting now, but anyway.
A great opportunity.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah.
But he was anxious that you know, that people would know that this is important to people. This matters.
Yeah, and so that would be honoured and respected.
Absolutely.
So you were matched up.
Indeed.
Yeah. And then I've asked you, you know, what made it difficult to say yes? What made it easy to say yes? Or what led you to say yes?
Well, I suppose one of the things that led me to say yes is that I've never said no. Right. You know, that should be my first time, and things have always worked out all right. You know, when I was ordained, I was asked to go teaching. I had never picked teaching as a career. When I had a choice of picking careers, I didn't pick teaching, and it worked out fine. And then I was asked to come by Bishop Willie back to Clare Care, and I was just settling into teaching, and it was just going grand, and I had got a rhythm going, and it was really going back into management. And I suppose I hadn't planned on that either, but it worked out. So everything has kind of worked out, you know, nearly every move. Kind of, I suppose, trusting in the Spirit, really. Yeah. Trusting that God is with you. Trusting that if you're true to your vocation, you know, and it's not a vocation just about being a priest, it's just true to your call, that you'll keep it. No more than married people, you know, it's not just the yes on the wedding day, it's the yeses all through life to, you know, changing houses or changing jobs or dealing with all sorts of...
Interesting, the next part of the journey.
Exactly. And one person that I, you know, that I spoke to in the discernment period, my spiritual director, did describe it as a vocation within a vocation. You know, so it's and I think that kind of made a lot of sense to me. So that made it easy to sort of say, look at, I haven't, God hasn't dropped me in it yet. So I'm
so going to trust.
Now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And for many people, you know, it just reminds me of the dedication of those who work in church life. I'm sure you've many peers, friends, maybe family members who are considering retiring at a time when you're going to take on your busiest role ever.
Yes. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So to me, it spells out commitment. The commitment of people who work in the church, you know, is incredible. And we are indebted and grateful to you for that commitment and hard work.
I have been privileged to be part of great circles of work and community in Roscrea, Clarecare. And the Clarecare circle is quite large because it takes the whole county, you know, in one shape or another. Great parishes in Corrifin and Croisin. And here in Innes and parts of the circle, you know, of the staff and the people who work in the diocesan circle, including yourself, Joanne, and Maureen Kelly, and I suppose very much like the pastoral development in the last 5 years, Maureen Kelly and myself and Jean were the pastoral development team, and that was a great experience. And then we had Marana as part of the new ministries team. That was excellent as well. You know, so I'm really grateful for all of that. I suppose I'm conscious of somebody, a great friend that lost over the last couple of weeks, Willie Corbett in Corrifin, who was a tremendous influence, not just to me, but indeed on people who knew him generally, a community builder beyond description, who lived and built community right throughout his life. And I'm delighted to be able to mention his name tonight,
yes,
because he was someone who was very special in my life.
Yes, huge influence.
Huge.
Yeah. And you are that for many as well. Sure. Can I thank you for taking time out? I know you're extremely busy at the moment trying to, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. A lot of people here in Killaloe want to do an awful lot of work with you before you leave. And I'm sure the people of Ferns are on to you as well, trying to prepare for your transition as bishop to them. And can I ask the Spirit to guide you and God to bless you on this new chapter?
Thank you very much, Joanne. It was lovely to be able to be here.
September, we were standing at the station waiting for a train. There was preaching Christian brothers, there was nuns and reverend mothers, there was guys and drunks and others, and everyone was just the same. Well, they came from Enniscorthy, from New Ross and Ferns and Gorey. There was buses from Bunclody, there was horses, carts and all. And as they stepped out on the platform, there was shouting and a screaming. And as they carried Larry Murphy, he looked 25 feet tall. So what's the story, Martin's story? Now what's it really bound for glory? And when at last the cup was lifted, they said we brought it back for you. And we were dancing at the crossroads, in the shadow of a bonfire, underneath the silver moonlight. We were singing until dawn, then we were dancing at the crossroads, with the punching and the porter, dancing jigs and polkas, until the early morn. In every barn and on the main street, there were hanging from the rafters, and they sang the boys of Wexford, like it was going out of style. All the bingo halls were empty, and all the masses finished early. Sure no one ever saw the likes of since the time of JFK. And when we look at young O'Gorman, and through the midfield he was storming, and then the Cusick stand erupted when he scored from 60 yards. But we were dancing at the crossroads, in the shadow of a bonfire, underneath the silver moonlight. We
We were singing until dawn. Yeah, we were dancing at the crossroads with the potting and the water, dancing jigs and reels and polkas until the early morn. George O'Connor, so many said he was a goner, but when he stood up in the Hogan, I even saw a grown man cry. We were dancing at the crossroads in the shadow of a bonfire underneath the silver moonlight. We were singing until dawn. We were dancing at the crossroads with the potting and the porter, dancing jigs and rings and polkas until the early morn.
Here we go!
Denny Ifitz, Henry Jerk, Cushon, Blood Rod, Danny Lean, Don Connor, Go, Billy Morton, Bad Story, John O'Connor, Tom Dempsey, George O'Connor, Adrian Fenlon, and Larry O'Gorman, Rory McCarthy, Larry Murphy, Gary Laffin, Emma Scanlon, Dave Grinney, Declan Roo, Jim Bourne, Shane, Carly Paulfin, Tommy Hall, Ireland team, and the man who dares to dream. His name is Liam Griffin, Seamus Cannon, Joe Kearns, MJ Reck, and all the rest. The Brady Men in 96 will be remembered with the best. Blackford, Quigley, Whelan, Doran, Boogie Murphy, Nolan Foote, and the names you can't recall. Your Wexford heroes, one and all.
Fuck Wexford!
And that was another great hurling song from Wexford and the Wild Swans, Dancing at the Crossroads, which of course was a great hit in 1996 when Wexford won the All-Ireland. Listening to it would, of course, remind you of Clare's glory years in hurling and the great All-Ireland wins of 95 and 97. We wish Bishop-elect Gerry Nash every blessing in his new role, and there will be much joy on Sunday, the 5th of September, when he will be ordained as the Bishop of Ferns. There will be dancing at the crossroads in Drumcharlie and in Tulla, and I know many people will be feeling very proud, especially Gerry's family, and I know the Mercy Sisters in Tulla and beyond will be especially proud. And of course, his alma mater, St. Joseph Secondary School Tulla, will be celebrating also. We look forward to that special day in September, and it's so great now to have the technology to be able to watch it live via the webcam. Our next interview is with Dr. Lorna Gold, who is a Scottish and Irish academic. She's also a climate campaigner and author, and she has done much work for Trocra and has been heavily involved in their climate campaign. She has been very inspired by Laudate Si, and to celebrate its 5th anniversary, she wrote a love letter to the earth. In this next interview, she speaks to us about the COVID-19 crisis, its impact on our climate targets, and why the climate change has never been treated with the same urgency as the current crisis.
What really strikes me in the what we're going through just now is really the kind of, from a Catholic point of view, is this, the whole message that Pope Francis put out in Laudato Si 5 years ago, actually, is coming up to the 5th anniversary of Laudato Si in May. And that document that he wrote, it's a letter to the whole of humanity. It's very, very much based on the science, looking at kind of a picture of the multiple different crises. And he didn't, obviously, in that mention pandemics, because it was much more focused on the environmental side of things and climate change. But I think it's very much, he puts forward a kind of a theology, a spirituality that is very much in tune with, I guess, what we're living through just now. So in Laudato Si, Pope Francis talks very much about interconnectedness being at the foundation of the Christian message, that we're all interconnected. We're not isolated individuals. We need to build those interconnections based on compassion, on sharing, on love. He uses a very strong word, communion, that we're part of a bigger reality of communion. And one of the interesting things that is put forward in Laudato Si, and I guess shared more broadly again with the climate movement within the Catholic Church and more broadly, is that this sense of connectedness and the sense of communion extends to other species and extends to the whole of creation, the whole of our connection with the universe. And that's quite radical thinking for a pope, and it overturns many decades of theological thinking in the Catholic Church, where, as you said, like there would be a kind of hostility almost to say we have a right to use, to extract, to and almost seeing this wealth as a sign of God's providence, or, you know, so there's a different theology of extraction and a theology of being masters of creation. And that's really overturned in Pope Francis, in the theology that he's putting forward in Laudato Si. It's much more of a gentle theology, in the sense of being gentle to the earth, but also recognising that this deep interconnectedness, that the presence of God in the material world, in his or her, in the created world. And I find that really hopeful. And one of the things that's been happening over the past few years is really kind of a great effort to bring this into the mainstream of the church, and to really, it's a huge challenge, because it's, I guess, this would not, as you said, be the mainstream theology of a lot of church-going Christians, let's just be frank about it. Like, it's not the mainstream, and yet it's coming from the Pope himself. And there's real, I guess, tensions within the churches on where this all sits. It's very, very deep rooted, this kind of sense of the kind of hostility to creation, and seeing that as part of the kind of story of Christianity and progress. But there's a lot of people who are very much working together to bring that forward, and to try and bring it to life. It's not just something that you kind of write theoretical papers about, or kind of, but it's something that's really lived, I think, amongst people as well. And we're planning to do a big an online celebration for the 5th anniversary of Laudato Si, which I might tell you about. It's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, we'll definitely follow up with that. But, I mean, it's interesting too, you talked about the species and the interconnectedness between species. And, you know, you've people like Dr. Jane Goodall saying things like, well, this pandemic is zoonotic, it's come from animals, and a lot of environmentalists are saying, well, it's coming from the fact that we've invaded animals' habitats, and also the fact that we've kept them in such unnatural, cramped condition that's allowed these diseases to jump to human hosts. So, you know, I mean, maybe there's an opportunity within this pandemic to kind of help people to see that interconnectedness, you know, that we can socially separate, but until we allow animals to essentially socially separate, these diseases are going to just keep multiplying.
Absolutely. And I think one of the challenges as we're kind of going forward with this, and is really to understand more deeply how these things are connected together, because I think there's still a tendency to prefer, even like in the media, to kind of say, well, that's the COVID crisis over there, and then we have the climate crisis over here, and we have the extinction crisis in the middle. But I think the relationship between them is complex, and I think that part of the challenge is not to kind of oversimplify it all and say, well, it's just the same crisis, but to, as Jane Goodall is doing, to kind of tease out where those connections are, and what I think one of the kind of opportunities through this is to see where the solutions are to that can serve both of these massive issues that we're facing at the moment. So where should we be focused in terms of recovery, and where should we be focused in terms of like societal change in order to tackle the what could possibly be future pandemics? Because as you say, these this is not going to be the last of these pandemics, because we've set up, in a sense, the perfect storm with the clearing of habitats and with all the industrialised agriculture and all the different kind of contexts that are being created through our consumerist, extractive, meat-intensive economy that can then allow diseases to pass from one species to another, and all the other problems that go with that as well. So it's we need to be focused now on looking at what are the kind of shifts that could be made that would enable, in a sense, society to get back on its feet, for us to resume some kind of social normality, but in the, at the same time move into a new normal. I think it's so important that that as we're kind of starting to emerge from the first wave of this, that we fight the kind of urge to go back, and I think that's going to be the hardest thing, because we all want a sense of security, and that kind of the urge to go back to the way things were is so strong for all of us, because we're craving our social patterns and interaction at this point. But can we start to think of a new normal? We're going to be forced to do that anyway, because the old normal, in a sense, is gone to some extent, in terms of the kind of some of the things that we would have been doing in the past, that they're now telling us, well, it'll be 2 years before you'll be able to go on holiday, perhaps, or you'll be but we need to start to proactively think, what would the new normal look like, and how could that be more ecological and more connected, like keeping those closer connections to the planet and to each other.
Beyond Belief on Clare FM.
You are listening to Beyond Belief on Clare FM.
Well, I'm delighted now to be joined by my colleague, Stephen Fletcher, in the UK. Good evening, Stephen.
Good evening, Joanne. What a pleasure to be speaking to you. Normally, I end up speaking to Jerry, and as nice as it is to speak to Jerry, it's even more delightful to be speaking to you. And we don't often do it on air, do we?
No, we get to chat off air about the programme, but it's lovely to speak to you this evening as part of the programme.
Yeah, well,
how are things in the UK?
Yeah, they're good, thank you. They're good. But I've really come on to talk about the setup that's about to change in the Church of Ireland Diocese in the west of Ireland. Back in 2019, after discussions going on for many years, it was decided that the church would amalgamate the Diocese of Tuam with the Diocese of Limerick and Killaloe. And this is for fairly obvious practical reasons. You know, when you look at the number of members of the churches there, we really can't justify two bishops with all the support and hierarchy that goes with them. And so the decision was taken, and that was confirmed by General Synod in 2019. The decision was taken then that, yes, these two dioceses would merge, which leads the problem of what do you do with a bishop? And they decided that they wouldn't be making them redundant, but the next time one of them retired, the other one would move over and take the position as a bishop of the United Diocese. So we've been waiting for that, wondering which of them would blink first, whether it would be Bishop Kenneth Kieran, our bishop, or whether it would be Bishop Patrick Rook, the Bishop of Tuam. And suddenly it all got resolved in the week, on Thursday evening at the diocesan council meeting, which I attended, it's on Zoom, of course. At the end of the meeting, Bishop Kenneth announced that he would be retiring on the 31st of October. But at the same time in Tuam, Bishop Patrick Rook was talking to his diocesan council and announced that he would be retiring on the same date at the same time. So both bishops are retiring, which means that there will be a new bishop of the combined diocese. That is a surprise that they're both going, but when you think about it, it's logical. And as Bishop Kenneth explained, the reason is that he is approaching retirement age. Bishop Patrick is 2 years younger. If one of them had gone first, the one that was left would only be in post for a year or two, and then he would retire. And so it made sense for them both to go, and then a new, presumably younger, bishop come in and take control of the combined diocese. So that was it. A big surprise. And we're hoping, I put in a request and I'm just in the process of arranging an interview. So it'll probably be coming up in one of the future Beyond Belief. I don't think I'll be able to get him in time for this evening, but we'll see. So that was the hot news. You know, we're full of bishops in your programme tonight.
We have the future with Bishop Elector and Ash. And yes, this is major news. And I'd say, you know, in time to come, the Catholic Church in Ireland will be actually following the same path, Stephen. You know, it is a massive change for you now. And I know, you know, people on the ground like yourself, you mentioned the support people. It has a massive knock-on effect now for those support people in Tuam and in Limerick Killaloe Diocese, because they're wondering where they stand if there's another person in the same role in the other diocese.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, there is another communications officer in Tuam who I'm sure does a far better job than I do. So
I don't know if that's possible, Steve.
But mine is a voluntary position, so I'm easily disposed of if they need to. So, you know, hopefully they might find a little role for me. But that's minor consideration.
So the end of October then, in your church, is it different to the Catholic Church? Do you nominate a bishop? How does it work?
Yeah, it's something that I had to, I'll have to do some more research on, because in Ireland it's different. Our bishops are voted by a panel made up of lay and clergy, and there's a panel involved, totalling, I think, 48 members in total, when you look at the two dioceses involved. So it's going to be quite a large body that decides it, I think. But I'll have to find out more.
Very interesting. Yeah. A very interesting process.
It is, yeah. It's something that I've not experienced before. I've seen various bishops come and go in the Church of England, but I haven't seen the same thing happen here. Mm-hmm. So it will be learning, and I will have to study exactly how it does work. But there's not the immediacy and the urgency that there is within your church, you know, where people are moved into positions very quickly. I don't know, but I think they're talking about early in the new year, so they're hoping to be a bit quicker than they are with priests. So in the new year, we're looking for a new, younger bishop of the combined diocese.
And it is interesting. I mentioned to you that the Catholic Church would probably go that way, and the papal nuncio, when he spoke at Bishop Elector in Ash's announcement last week, said we have to catch up, and that this is very much going to be something in the Catholic Church as well, where dioceses will amalgamate. So it's good that you're doing it, and the Catholic Church can learn, you know, from your way of doing it, and maybe follow the same path or the same geographical areas. Perhaps,
Well, thank you for letting me creep into your program, Joanne.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Stephen. And I know that's huge news, and it strikes a big chord with many people. It's very important news.
Yeah, thank you. And when we get an interview with Bishop Kenneth, obviously we'll be bringing it to you.
Very good. Stephen, best wishes to yourself and Francis, and we're very much looking forward to having you home in Clare when it's possible.
Yeah. Let's hope the Delta variant recedes and we can safely get back. Thanks, Joanne.
Look forward to that.
Every blessing. Thank you. Cheerio.
We have come to the end of tonight's programme. A very big thank you to our guests, to Bishop-elect Gerard Ash and to Dr. Lorna Gold. Many thanks, as always, to my colleague Stephen Fletcher in production. Father Brendan Quinlivan will be with you this time next week, and there will be Mass at the usual time of 9 a.m. next Sunday morning. If you'd like to listen back to any feature on tonight's programme, you can do so by clicking on Catch Up on the Clare FM website. I will leave you now with the Old Irish Blessing, which for the first time in history was sung by over 300 churches and Christian organisations from every county on the island of Ireland. I'm going to dedicate this song to Bishop-elect Gerard Ash, and to all you, our listeners, and to all those whom you hold dear. Until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Bannock Day.
Waking or sleeping, thy presence, my light.
Christ be with you. Christ be with you.